Good evening, Boston. Welcome to BNN News. I'm Faith Hamafidon. Thanks for tuning in. Last week, Sarah Ann Shaw, a great in Boston's news world, died at the age of 90. Shaw served 19 years on BNN's board of directors from 2003 to 2022. This week, the city recognizes the life of the trailblazer. On Monday, Boston honored the life of the late broadcast pioneer and activist Sarah Ann Shaw. The wreath-laying ceremony was held at the Embrace Sculpture, a fitting place for a woman who so loved her city. Shaw was the first Black woman reporter to appear on TV in Boston, beginning her career at WBZ4 in 1969. The Roxbury native covered Boston's communities of color with care and uplift, and she remained active in the community after retiring from her career, which spanned three decades. City leaders and residents shared their reflections.
In this age of social media where people have an outlet, you know, 40, even 20 years ago, that outlet didn't exist, where people could tell stories, they could tell their truth, where they can have an audience to tell news, big and small. And so Sarah Ann Shaw was that community news teller for all of us. I think she was one of the first voices and people that looked like us, people of color in the city of Boston. Not only did she have a local presence, but her presence was felt nationally.
She took me under her wing, and I know I am one of generations who are where they are today because of the example that she set, but more importantly, the love that she continued to pour into her community long after she had retired from the trailblazing, groundbreaking role on TV. She was still everywhere, documenting events, pulling people together, and making sure that this city, her city, continued to move forward.
She was the kind of person, the kind of community and civic leader that so many of us owe our opportunities, owe our ability to live out our purpose to her legacy, to her work. And, you know, we all will reach the point where we have to cross over. But I hope that in this time, people will really celebrate her life, because it's the kind of life and the kind of legacy that we should all aspire to.
Representation always matters when it comes to how we view ourselves and where we should go and ought to be. And when Sarah Ann Shaw got her job as a reporter and be able to see her on television, and not only talking about the negative things that happened in the community, but also lifting up all of the positive things that were happening. And so there were many people who saw her as someone who really cared about their lives and where it was going. And there are so many people who owe their leadership to her mentorship. And so we're all very grateful for Sarah Ann Shaw.
Video game enthusiasts from all over the U.S. got their game on at PAX East 2024.
Yeah, video games!
That's a gamer in his happy place. Last week, gamers and cosplayers from all over the U.S. gathered at the Boston Convention and Exhibition Center to reunite a community that spans generations, locations, and identities for PAX East.
To me, video games are a place to explore and experience new worlds with my friends or alone, and there's always a sense of play in it, and you never, no matter how old you get, you always want to play and have that joy and fun of being a kid again.
I really enjoy the storytelling. I really enjoy the colors of the games, the costumes, everyone wearing their outfit that they made for their favorite character in the game. Just the excitement that people have behind their eyes when they get to see that character in person, that is the magic for me.
From competitive racing to classic 8-bit to open world adventure, there was something for every fan. And with appreciation for the many genres represented, there was much love for one another.
I started with these crazy video games when I was about 4 years old, and I've stayed playing ever since just because of the community that it brings. I mean, honestly, there's so many people here today because of that community, I honestly think it's just a brilliant thing to be a part of. It brings people together.
They're one big family, you know. You may not know literally anyone, but you still feel comfortable to be who you are, you know. No matter how you identify, no matter who you are, what you look like, who you're cosplaying, everyone loves everyone here. And that's what makes PAXI such an amazing convention.
Their shared love of video games has created lasting friendships and leveled up playing skills. It's also provided an escape where many young people at heart can have control over their destinies.
I got into video games as a kid. I played a lot of like your early on Nintendo stuff, and for me, there's nothing better than getting lost in a game. I personally love like getting lost in the story. Makes you feel like you're a part of it, and it just kind of like you can put your life away for a little while.
In a world that's slowly becoming more and more monotone, having these games that are so full of life and color, and as we, there's nothing left on this planet that we haven't seen, really, and having an entirely new world to explore and look at and just explore every crevice of is really a wonderful experience, and that's what draws me to them.
Video games are an escape from my real life. When I come home from school or I had a stressful day, I love to just get on my computer and play and escape and go into a world where I can have a billion lives and just play all day and it doesn't matter. There's no stressors.
I find video games very therapeutic, very relaxing. It's like an escape from reality. A lot of games can like really help you relax, keep your mind at ease, take your mind off the real world.
In today's world, everything is so stressful and so real. It's really nice to be able to escape in a way that is so immersive. It's an experience you only really get when you're in games. There's lots of ways to have a little bit of an escape, but a game is just so all-encompassing. You get to really feel like you're a part of it, make choices, make decisions. There's nothing like it.
PAX East has grown exponentially since its humble beginnings in 2004. More than 100,000 people enjoyed panels, exhibitions, and gaming tournaments over the four-day event. Next year's conference is already on the books for May. The passion of the gaming community continues to elevate all aspects of gaming culture.
Mayor Michelle Wu has introduced nearly $70 million in grant awards in order to create more affordable housing in Boston.
On Friday, Mayor Wu announced that $69 million will go towards this year's Affordable Rental, Homeowners, and Cooperative Housing Funding Awards. Among the plots of land that these 14 awardees will use for housing are a site with a car wash in Dorchester and an empty lot in Mattapan. The money will create or preserve 826 housing units, with 775 designated as income-restricted homes.
So today we are marking an incredible collaboration, $69 million that will go toward making Boston a city that's easier for everyone to call home. We're talking about seniors who will be able to afford to stay in the neighborhoods that raise them and where they raise their families. Families who will put down roots that will have impact for generations to come. Young people growing up feeling like this is their community and owning a home someday isn't a pipe dream.
In light of the continuing affordable housing crisis, these grants will support developments in 9 neighborhoods. As of September 2023, there were over 42,000 applicants on Boston Housing Authority's combined wait list.
In the past 2 years, the city of Boston has permitted 2,323 new units of income-restricted housing. The vast majority of those are in construction or like one paper away from starting construction. This is the most income-restricted housing over a 2-year period that we have ever permitted since in the last 25 years anyways.
And now we've gotten it right and we're going to come build some housing and it's going to be all affordable housing. This is what we're here to do. It is unacceptable that it costs $125,000 a year for any single person to live here. It is unacceptable to me that black people have to move from our communities we grew up in to Brockton, Randolph, Stoughton, Randolph, and all of the other southern places. We should be able to live in this city too.
The mayor's office says their goal is to produce 4,700 new units by 2025. At the end of 2023, Boston permitted 2,300 of those units, nearly half of the target.
Mission Hill Neighborhood Housing Services is thrilled that we're going to be able to build 94 units of 100% affordable housing in the Roxbury Crossing neighborhood on transit-oriented development, something we've been working on for a very long time. This is the third phase, and we're going to be able to bring more families to be part of our community.
The next generation of the workforce may face many challenges, but Boston Public Schools is helping students get a step ahead through the Youth Summer Job Fair.
At the Reggie Lewis Track Center, these teens are exchanging a summer of relaxation for an unforgettable learning experience, one that will allow them to build skills and earn income.
What I learned from my first summer job was a lot of problem solving and how to use that in my everyday life and in the future. I learned also a lot about myself and how I succeed in different environments, and I just take those skills and implement them into the future.
Well, it feels good to like finally be able to be independent and make your own money to like provide for yourself instead of having to like ask for money. But having your own stable job like allows you to have freedom in a way, and it feels good.
For those planning to continue on to higher education, the ability to contribute to their tuition is motivation to find a summer job and make the most of it.
Summer jobs are important for our kids because it gives them the ability to navigate the workforce. Also, we're talking about kids who need money for college. And a lot of the times, that summer job can really help them close the gap for their financial needs, especially when it comes to students who have a financial gap or who have specific needs. So our community is really pulling together to get our kids the opportunity, and honestly, that's all they need.
I think it's very important that we have these opportunities for kids over the summer and as well as maybe, you know, long term, so they can see a lot of the different careers out there.
With over 9,000 jobs and 150 employers represented, it was a golden opportunity for students to create new connections as they plan for the future.
It's so important for teens to get that summer job to learn workforce skills because teens are able to learn personal agency through getting these summer jobs. So they're able to learn how to get along with people better in the workplace. Skills like setting up a bank account and getting paid really empowers teens to be able to do things on their own and become successful young adults.
I'm excited to see so many kids, families coming to look at the opportunities. And we've made a commitment in the city, especially myself in our office and the council, to connect kids with these great jobs. It's an opportunity to learn so many skills outside of school, and in these summer months, making money, making new friends, learning work skills, showing up, responsibility is wonderful.
As we close out Women's History Month, women continue to honor each other in unique ways. BNN's Akua Duvall met an artist who's paying tribute to historic women through quilting.
I found a lot of these photographs on the internet.
These are mothers, nurses, and scientists. Just some of the women that artist Jane Keddy celebrates in her exhibit titled Women's Work, which opened on February 29th at the Jamaica Plain branch of the Boston Public Library. Keddy says the 20 different fabric panels are made from cloth and hand-colored pictures, which pay homage to women who have worked over the last 150 years.
Part of what I want to do here is to make sure that young women and girls understand the history.
Sanvi Jegan says her favorite panel is the one called Nurses.
I'm aspiring to be a doctor, and I just love the portrayal of women. They give me joy, and I just love looking at them and seeing how women were portrayed.
Gail Keddy Wigner says her sister's artwork is better in person.
I have been with her while she sews each panel on her lap, and I didn't get a sense of the magnitude and the power of the exhibit until I actually saw it all hung.
Jane Keddy says each piece took up to 20 hours to make, and she used about 14 yards of fabric altogether. Five of the designs will be shown at the Mothers Institute for Collaboration in Art in Northampton for the entire month of May. The rest will be on display at the New Dawn Art Center in Ashburnham, Massachusetts. For BNN News, I'm Akua Duvall.
The conversation around equal pay among genders has been a topic of heated discussion for decades, with 2023 statistics showing that women still only make 77 cents for every white man's dollar. National Equal Pay Day symbolizes the ongoing fight for gender pay equity, raising awareness about the wage gap and the need for equal pay for equal work. Kim Borman, Executive Director of the Boston Women's Workforce Council, joined us in studio to discuss National Equal Pay Day and how Boston's Women's Workforce Council is making strides in their mission to create wage equity for all. Enjoy the conversation.
The Boston Women's Workforce Council is a public-private organization that partners with the Boston mayor, whomever that may be, and Greater Boston employers who are dedicated to closing gender and racial wage gaps. And we work together to tackle this issue in town.
Excellent. And I know last time we met in April, we are meeting in March, and the National Equal Pay Day was on Tuesday, March 12th. Can you talk about why and how we got to meet earlier?
So one of the things that we do at the Boston Women's Workforce Council is we collect the data right off the payroll systems of our members who give it to us anonymously, and to produce a picture of the wage gap for our community, what it looks like. And we do that every 2 years. And this year, it went down 30% from when we did it in 2021. So the wage gap was actually at 21 cents versus the 30 cents we saw in 2021. That's a big deal. So that's why we've moved up. I mean, you remember National Equal Pay Day, the Boston Equal Pay Day, which actually will be on March 18th this year, and last year was on April 21st, has to do with when women finally get paid the same as, on average, as their male colleagues did at the end of December 31st the year before. So it still's been 2.5 months, but it's better. I mean, it's better than it was. Mm.
And what changes have you seen in regard to the wage gap when it comes to race for this year?
So this year it was very disappointing. We did not see the same success, I would say, in terms of the gender racial wage gap. In fact, well, the racial wage gap, which includes both women and men, went to 27 cents. So that's a lot higher than the 21 cents for the gender wage gap. And it's also higher than the 24 cents we saw for the racial wage gap in 2021. When you look at why that is, it has a lot to do with the kind of jobs where we see people of color overrepresented. And just like what we say with the gender wage gap, until we can see people moving into roles that pay more, higher salaries, more senior positions, you're not going to be able to close that gap. So we really have to target that this year. Mm.
And then in regard to helping women right now who aren't being equally compensated, what is BWWC doing to help them get there?
So what we do is we work with our 200-plus employers to support them in the interventions and the policies that they put into place to try to overcome these barriers. And I think I must have said this last year because it's still true, there's no silver bullet. So you have to test and learn from what you put in place. But there are certain things that we've seen bring more success than others. First of all, it has to do with leadership and accountability. And if the people who are leading your company are really dedicated to this mission, and then make sure that the managers are accountable also, you will see more success. In terms of tactics, things like making sure that the people who are deciding promotions, that oftentimes if it's a committee of people, and they're different people, not necessarily from the same unit, or that look the same, if they are a part of deciding promotions, oftentimes you'll get a fairer result. So it's things like that that our members report on, and then we are able to share with everybody.
So in regard to the advancement of women, Boston has seen a lot of incredible things happen. We have an all-female executive team, from the governor to the mayor. We have a female vice president. What's been most inspiring for you this year?
Well, of course, those things are very inspiring, and they're doing a great job. I would say that for the BWWC, seeing Claudia Golden, who is an economist at Harvard, who has been on top of the gender gap, doing research on the gender wage gap for years. She won a Nobel Prize in December, and that was extremely exciting to see because it means that what she's been saying for all these years, and she says the same thing that we say, which is you've got to make sure that you're intentional about intentional with promoting women, that that's the way you're going to actually close the gap.
Project Citizenship is a nonprofit organization dedicated to increasing naturalization among immigrants in New England, with a focus on assisting the most vulnerable and disadvantaged populations. The organization will be hosting its annual Boston Citizenship Day workshop at the Reggie Lewis Center in Roxbury Crossing on Saturday, April 27th. We invited Gail Breslow, Executive Director of Project Citizenship, and Hannah Avila, Legal Access Coordinator for the Mayor's Office for Immigrant Advancement, to discuss the big day and how they assist immigrants through the path to U.S. citizenship. Here's our conversation.
I'd love for you to share the goals of Project Citizenship and the Mayor's Office for Immigrant Advancement, and what are the services that you offer?
Oh, thank you. Great way to start. So Project Citizenship is a nonprofit organization that was founded just about 10 years ago. Our singular focus is on increasing the naturalization rate in New England, in Massachusetts in particular. And we do that by providing legal services at no cost whatsoever to our clients and help them, first of all, determine their eligibility for citizenship, and then, assuming they're eligible, take them through the whole process of completing the 20-page application process for citizenship, and then we serve as their attorney of record throughout the process, helping to ensure that they have all of the documentation that is required prior to submission to the federal government. Anyone who is eligible for a fee waiver, we help them get that. Eligibilities based on disabilities or age as well. So really, we are kind of a full service operation around citizenship for residents, lawful permanent residents of Massachusetts.
The Mayor's Office for Immigrant Advancement strives to ensure that the city of Boston is accessible and equitable for its immigrant residents. And so we are ensuring that Boston residents can, immigrant residents can fully engage in the economic, civil, social, and cultural life in Boston. Right. So we serve as liaison between immigrant communities and City Hall. We advise and consult with the mayor and her office to ensure that policies and programs are accessible to immigrants. And we work with a lot of wonderful community-based organizations like Project Citizenship and offer some of our own strategic programming as well.
Wonderful. And how are your offices working together to help immigrants who call Boston home?
Yeah. So we are so grateful to have worked with Project Citizenship since 2014 for this event. So this will be our 10th Citizenship Day held at the Reggie Lewis Center. Project Citizenship, as Gail said, focuses very specifically on citizenship. And we are excited to have this event and have been delighted to have this ongoing partnership with them for that.
Great. And as you said, Citizenship Day is at Reggie Lewis Center. It will be April 27th on a Saturday. Can you tell us more about what the day entails for the people who attend and who's eligible for it?
Yes. So eligibility for citizenship requires either 5 years, having had a green card for 5 years, or being married to a U.S. citizen and having had a green card for 3 years. So those are the two basic ways that someone is eligible for citizenship. We do screen everyone in advance of Citizenship Day. So if people are interested, we'll share that information in a little bit. But the idea is we screen you ahead of time for eligibility, and then you get an appointment time to come to the Reggie Lewis Center. And I would suggest people plan to be there for a number of hours because the process is quite thorough that we undertake. We want to make sure that we get everything that we need on that one day so that it minimizes the follow-up that's required for our clients. So upon arrival, people register, they'll get a folder with their name on it that's been pre-prepared, and then they will sit with a volunteer to complete the 20-page application for citizenship. And after that, they will take that material that's just been prepared to another volunteer who's an attorney who will go through it all again to make sure that everything that we have is there, or everything that we need is there, that all of the necessary documentation is there as well. And then there's a third process, which we fondly refer to as checkout, when we kind of, again, make sure that we have everything that we need. If someone is eligible for a fee waiver, the fee is actually going up April 1st. It will be $760 by the time April 27th come to apply for citizenship. That's not a fee that goes to us, it's to the federal government. But many people who are on public benefits are eligible for fee waivers, so we help people fill out that form as well. And then by the time people leave the Reggie Lewis Center at the end of the day, we'll have everything that we need to actually be able to submit their application to the federal government. The processing time now for an application is around 6 months. So, you know, assuming someone comes to Boston Citizenship Day and we are able to collect everything that we need on that day, we'll be able to submit their application, you know, in early May. And it's possible, this speaks to your, you know, a question about, well, why should I bother? What are the benefits? But it's possible that they might be able to vote in the November election you know, we have everything that we need on that day.
So you were talking earlier about some of the benefits. You mentioned the right to vote for people who become citizens. What are some of the other benefits to becoming a citizen?
Yeah, there are many benefits to citizenship. So the right to vote is one of them, but you are free and safe from deportation when you become a U.S. citizen as opposed to being a lawful permanent resident. You can apply for more jobs with the federal government. You can run for office, you can benefit from scholarships and benefits that non-US citizens are not able to get. There's increased opportunities for family reunification. So there are many, many benefits to applying for US citizenship.
And for immigrants who might be on the fence, who might be feeling a little bit of fear of taking that next step to become a citizen, what words of advice do you have for them?
I think I would encourage people, if you are a green card holder and if you're not sure if you're eligible, if you're not sure if you want to apply for citizenship, to reach out to an organization who can provide that service to help you through the process, to assess your eligibility, to give you guidance, and to help with the entire process from submitting an application until the final oath of allegiance. So I would encourage people to reach out and to seek more information.
When Hannah says guidance, I want to underline that, because there are times that we will tell someone that this isn't the right time for you, either because they aren't eligible because they haven't had a green card for 5 years, but also because of circumstances. Perhaps they've traveled for a too extended period of time in order to be eligible. I mean, we don't want anyone to pay that fee and submit that application and then get denied. So we will encourage people to wait. In some cases, if someone has a criminal history that is such that it's likely that their application would be denied, we will also advise people not to take that step. So we will give you that legal counsel.
Thanks for tuning in, Boston. That's our broadcast. Wishing you a very happy Easter. For BNN News, I'm Faith Amaphidon. I'll see you next week.